Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Augustinian Institute entitled, Why Are There Women? Augustine Answers. This talk is delivered by Professor Dr. Gillian E. Clark.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It is both an honor and a pleasure to give this lecture in the series, Augustine for All. In this beautiful island so close to the two countries where Augustine lived and worked, in this institute, which continues his tradition of community and of learning. It's also very interesting for me to give this lecture, because society has changed so much since I first began to write about the history of women. And changes in society mean changes in the questions that historians ask and in their reading of the evidence. Many years ago, I had two reasons for starting to work on and with Augustine. One is that I'm a classicist. Augustine is one of the greatest ever writers of Latin. The other, I'm a historian. And in his letters and sermons, Augustine is one of the best sources of information about people's lives in the late 4th and early 5th centuries. But my other set of reasons for working on and with Augustine concerned the present, not the past. It was his continued influence on Christian ways of thinking about the social roles of women and their relationships with men. In the later 20th century, Augustine was not for all. Instead, he was very often quoted as one of those early church woman haters who made life so difficult for Christian women. Here is one very famous example. Augustine is trying to offer a literal reading of the creation story in the book of Genesis. Not allegorical interpretations, hidden meanings, but what actually happened, he said. He's reached the creation of Eve, the very first woman. What is she for? God said, "It is not good for man to be alone. Let us make him a helper suited to him." Now, if the question is asked, for what purpose did this helper need to be made? The only plausible answer is for having children. That's what was said at the first creation. God made them male and female and blessed them, saying, "Increase and multiply." So, there are two kinds of human being because that's how human beings reproduce. But Augustine is not content to leave it at that. As always, he considers other possible answers. And this is where he got into trouble. If it was not for help in procreating children that the woman was made for the man, what help was she made for? To work the land with him? But there wasn't work yet that needed help. And if help was needed, another man would be better. And the same can be said about company, if he was tired of being alone. For living and talking together, two male friends are so much better suited than man and wife. Perhaps they needed to live together with one giving the instructions and one taking them, to avoid a clash of wills and a disturbance of peace. But that would happen anyway with two men, because one was made first and the other one later. So, I cannot find any help for which the woman was made for the man if you take away the purpose of childbearing. This was not well received in the later years of the 20th century, when women's options were transformed by changes in the workplace and family life. What are women for? Augustine's answer, it seems, is having babies. not for working with men, not for studying alongside men, not for talking things over with men. And although there was surely no housework in paradise, it never ever occurs to him that housework is also work. And then there's Augustine's interpretation of the punishment of Eve. In sorrow shall you bring forth children. You shall turn to your husband and he shall lord it over you. Dominabitur tui. Domination, lording it over people, is very important in Augustine's thought about all human relationships. And I shall return to it often in this lecture. Dominus means master. In the Latin Bible, it's used to address the Lord God. In everyday Latin, it meant the master of a slave, or someone whose power was so great that the people he ruled called him master. In Roman law, slaves are property. They are owned by their masters. They can't call anything their own. They can't make decisions of their own. They had little protection in law. They could be cruelly punished. How then would Augustine interpret, "He shall lord it over you, dominabitur," in his literal interpretation of the book of Genesis? "We shall have to see," he says, "how you shall turn to your husband and he shall lord it over you," can be taken in the literal sense. For it is not fitting to believe that before sin, the woman was created differently, so that her husband should not lord it over her, and she should not turn towards him in service. It is not fitting to believe that the woman was created differently. It's not fitting to believe that she was created equal to the man, and his lordship over her is only a consequence of sin. Some people in Augustine's time did believe that, and he doesn't explain here why it is not fitting. He does say that we can understand this service of wife to husband to be the service of social status. It's not the service of love, which St. Paul says husbands and wives should give to one another. But Paul said that the wife must not lord it over the husband. God's decision, says Augustine, assigned that rather to the man. And it was the fault, not the nature of the woman, that deserved to have her husband as a master. But if this is not maintained, nature will be more distorted, and the fault will be increased. Now this is really confusing. Augustine seems both to say that the woman was created such as to serve her husband, that he should be her master, and that this is a consequence of her fault, not of her nature. He also says that unless the husband continues to be master, the fault will be increased and the nature more distorted. He doesn't explain here what he means. But it makes better sense if we consider how he thinks about order in human society. Augustine was very sure that humans are naturally social beings. We're made to live in society. But he was also very conscious that human wills conflict with one another. think what he says about babies in the Confessions. He couldn't remember being a baby, but he'd seen babies. And he imagines himself as an infant, thrashing around with his limbs, trying to make people do what he wanted, and then crying because he was angry with his superiors who were not serving him, with free people who were not doing what he wanted. Now, Augustine, like many philosophers of his time, thought that if you look at babies, you see what human nature is like. And what he saw in babies was what has gone wrong with human beings. They want their own way. They want other people to do what they want. Now, wanting one's own way is what went wrong in the beginning, at the fall. And that's why the city of God is the community of all those angels and humans who want what God wants. But the other city, the city of this world, is the community of all those angels and humans who say to God, "I did it my way," who want others to do what they say. They want to be master of their own lives and of other people's. In this fallen world, Augustine thought, we all want our own way. And that's why we must have rank and status. Some people giving the orders, some people taking them. Because unless we have that, we can't maintain any kind of peace in human society. Social order does not always match natural order. Rulers are not always the best and the most intelligent people. Slavery is an obvious example. Slavery as a human institution is a consequence of sin. But that doesn't mean that everyone who is actually a slave in law deserves to be a slave, or is worse than the man or woman who owns them. You remember in that passage I quoted just now, Augustine considers one suggestion why God created a woman as helper, not a man, because another man would have conflicted with the will of the first man. Whereas it's just obvious to Augustine that with a man and a woman, the man will give the orders and the woman will follow them. This is a fact of natural order. It's not a fact of social status, like the relationship of master and slave. The woman was created such as to serve her husband. Now, the reaction of the last, half century is to say it's not a fact of natural order. It was a fact of social order, but we have moved on. We don't assume that most women will marry and have children. We do assume that women can be educated like men, do the same jobs as men, hold positions of authority like men. We are still debating whether male and female brains work differently, whether boys and girls learn differently, whether they have different priorities in their lives. We don't know the answers yet there. But we do know that among men and women, there are many variations, many differences in kind. Why did Augustine think there is a natural hierarchy of man over woman? One answer comes in another passage of his literal interpretation of Genesis, where Augustine is considering a really difficult question. How did it ever happen that Adam believed what the serpent said? Adam had a mind, he had a spirit, he had not yet fallen away from God. How could he possibly believe there was something good that God did not want him to have? Ah, says Augustine, is that why the woman was approached? Because she was of little intellect, and perhaps she was still living by sense perception, not by mind. And that is why the Apostle Paul does not attribute the image of God to her. If you really want to be thought of as an early church woman hater, that is the way to do it. Augustine associates reason with male, unreason with female. Not in God's image is the title of one of the earliest source collections on the history of women in Europe. It came out in 1973, and I discovered the other day that in my university library it's catalogued as HQ something or other, not. Augustine, to do him justice, immediately pointed out not that the mind of woman cannot receive that image, because Paul says that in God's grace we are neither male nor female, but perhaps the woman had not yet attained what happens in recognizing God, which she was to attain gradually under the rule and guidance of the man. And so it was the woman who was led astray by the serpent. But what about Adam, who should have known better? Paul says that Adam was not led astray. And Augustine thinks that fits with Genesis. Eve says, the serpent led me astray. Adam does not say, the woman led me astray. He says, the woman gave me fruit from the tree, and I took a bite. But why did Adam take a bite? Here, Augustine's answers change within a few pages. He had suggested a much more independent-minded Eve. She believed the serpent because there was already in her mind that love of its own power and overconfidence in itself. She didn't just take the serpent's word for it. She went and made her own assessment of the tree. And she didn't think that she could die from eating that. So she concluded that when God said, if you eat this, you will die, God must have meant something different. And so she took fruit and ate some and gave it to her husband. Perhaps, says Augustine, with a word of encouragement which Scripture leaves to be understood. Or perhaps, he says, the man did not need any encouragement because he could see she had not died. It reminds me very much of some feminist theology in the 1980s, when it seemed very important to show that Eve was enterprising and independent. But a little later, Augustine has a very different Eve. Solomon, the wise king, knew that he should not worship idols, but he did it so as not to upset the women in his life. whom he loved too much. Likewise, Adam did not want to upset Eve. He thought that if she was alienated from him, she might just wither away, fade away entirely. He was wrong to eat the apple. He was punished for it. But his motive was friendly goodwill, amicalis benevolentia. It was not sexual desire, because he didn't yet experience that. That came after the fall. So Adam is the protective male, older and wiser than his wife, deeply concerned for her, anxious that there should be no distance in the marriage. It's the kind of marriage Augustine himself had expected to make when he was in his early 30s to a girl who was not yet ready for marriage. That's to say, she was not yet 12 years old, which in Roman law was the age at which marriage became valid. So he was expecting a marriage with a 20-year age difference. And that difference in age and experience explains his comment that for living and talking together, two men friends would be so much better. In the Confessions, he very movingly describes his distress when he sent away the woman he'd lived with for more than 10 years. But he never suggests that she was an intellectual companion to him, like the friends who did the same job as he did, who read the same books, who talked to him. How could she be when women are weaker in reason than men? Augustine spells this out in another of his reflections on the book of Genesis. He kept coming back to it. There is a natural order in human beings, such that women serve men and children serve their parents. Because here too there is justice, in that the weaker reason serves the stronger. And he says here too, because he has been talking about human beings ruling over animals who are not rational. That too is a natural hierarchy. It seemed obvious that women are less rational than men. We need only look at the range of hidden meanings that people in Augustine's time found in God created them male and female. Now, Augustine discusses these meanings in City of God because he thought they were wrong. He thought it was quite clear that God blessed them and told them to increase and multiply could have a hidden meaning. It could refer to multiplying spiritual awareness and thoughts. But he did not think you could find a hidden meaning in God created them male and female. It is not possible, he said, to understand male and female as something similar in an individual human being, on the grounds that in a human being, there's one thing that rules and another that is ruled. And similarly, when Jesus reminded the Pharisees that God made humans male and female and explained, this is why a man leaves his father and mother and lives with his wife, and they shall be two in one flesh. This, says Augustine, is not about the spirit that rules, the flesh that obeys, the rational soul that rules, the irrational desire that obeys, the contemplative virtue that is superior, the active virtue that is inferior, the intellect of the mind and the senses of the body. It is clearly about the bond of marriage. Now, Augustine rejects all these hidden meanings, but they show how obvious it seemed that ruling and rational equals male, ruled and irrational equals female. And in the De Trinitate on the Trinity, it seems that Augustine does endorse these hidden meanings when he asks whether women are the image of God. Of all Augustine's reflections on women, this is probably the most often quoted. The woman, together with her husband, is the image of God, so that the whole substance is one image. But when she is assigned as help, which applies to her alone, she is not the image of God. In what applies to the man alone, he is the image of God, an image as full and complete as when joined with the woman into one. This has so often been quoted as if Augustine was saying, women are not in God's image. But once again, we need to read it in relation to his way of thinking. And this time, we need to think about how he interprets the Bible. For him, it is basic that the Bible is right and consistent, so that God's people have a secure guide. Whereas, he says, philosophers disagree about absolutely everything. So if it seems that one passage in the Bible contradicts another, that must be to make us think harder. And if we really cannot find a literal meaning that is consistent with the rest of Scripture, that's when there has to be a hidden meaning somewhere. So, Genesis says that God created human beings, male and female, in God's image. Paul says that man is God's image, but woman is the image and glory of man. There has to be some way of understanding how human beings are God's image that fits both these texts. The only explanation, Augustine thinks, is one that he gave earlier when he was talking about the human mind. The mind is the image of God when it's contemplating truth. Even when part of its attention is directed to earthly things, then the part that is contemplating truth is still the image of God. But the part that is engaged with earthly things is not itself the image of God. So Augustine does not say that women are not the image of God. He says explicitly they are the image of God. It says so in Genesis. And when Paul apparently says they are not, there must be a hidden meaning here. This is one of many instances where something that Augustine said has been used without attention to its context. Taking Augustine out of context was first done by people who wanted his authority. They wanted to quote him. But then it was done by people who wanted Augustine as authority for what is wrong with Christianity, sometimes because they cared very deeply and wanted to put right what they thought was wrong, but sometimes because they wanted to show that Christianity is wrong. And this is what has been happening in the debates about Augustine on women. Some people want to show that although he is a man of his time, his theology allows greater possibilities for women. Others want to show that his theology was a product of his time and of his own anxieties and should no longer be influential. And those debates continue. Now, as I said, I am a classicist. My first task is to read Augustine as best I can in the context of his own time and his own concerns. But to do that, I have to stay aware, as best I can, of my concerns and what I take for granted. As everyone who works on Augustine recognizes, it is very easy to feel that you know this man, you understand what he's saying. So trying to read Augustine is not separate from thinking about the value of what he says and why I think it's valuable or not. One way of rescuing Augustine from being an early church woman hater is to say that he was facing facts as he knew them. Most men just do have more muscle power than women for hard physical work. And muscle power, human or animal muscle, is what there was in his time. It's machines and computers that have transformed opportunities to work. Most women just were not educated in literature and philosophy, like Augustine and his men friends. There were some highly educated women, but he was very unlikely to meet them. And he couldn't meet women who did the same job as he and his friends did, because women were not teachers and public servants. Mostly they ran the house and had children. So we can say Augustine was a man of his time. We can also say that we should read him in context. We should acknowledge that he was answering different questions. In that opening section of On the Trinity that I quoted just now, his question is not, so are women the image of God? His question was, is the physical nature of human beings the image of God? Can we understand something about the Trinity from the threefold relation of man, woman, and child? And the answer has to start from the Bible. That's why he's considering those passages. Augustine knew in general that anything he said might be used against him. He knew there were shorthand writers taking down his words. He did not know that 1600 years later, his words would be used in debate on the social roles of women. He didn't write a treatise on women, a De Mulieribus. And that's why I'm trying to reconstruct Augustine on women from things he said in different times, in different contexts, and using other works of his to try to fill out what he meant. He did write treatises about marriage and about celibacy. Father Caruana will be talking about those later in the course. But here too, his question is not, what are women for? It is, how should human beings live? He did think that celibacy is better than marriage because it frees people, men and women, to commit their lives to God without being preoccupied by all the ordinary concerns of family life. But he also insisted that marriage is a God-given good, that God created human beings, male and female, and blessed them and told them to increase and multiply. That's what women are for. That's why he asked the question,
What else are women for? It's to show that marriage is a good thing. Some people in Augustine's time thought that childbearing would never have happened if human beings had not brought death into the world by falling away from God. So the division of humanity into male and female was damage limitation. It was so that they could reproduce and overcome the effects of death. On that view, it's not just childbearing that's a consequence of sin. It's women who are a consequence of sin. And Augustine did not think that. In the last book of City of God, he deals with a whole range of questions about the resurrection. And one of them is, well, you've just said that in the resurrection, all bodily defects will be put right. Does that mean that women will not be resurrected as women? Femaleness, said Augustine, is not a defect. They will be resurrected as women. Though you might like to know that those of us who think we are too fat or too thin will come out just right. So, we should understand Augustine in the context of his time. We should read him in the context of his writing. We should also consider his own experience, which we know only from what he wrote about it. Very little about the partner he lived with for 10 and more years. Rather more about his mother. And what he wrote about Monica shows that he did not just accept the common belief that women are weaker in reason than men. I quoted just now Augustine's argument that there is a natural order in which those who are weaker in reason serve those who are stronger. And he continues. So, in cases of lordship and service, dominatio servitus, justice is evident when those who surpass in reason surpass in lordship. But when justice is thrown into confusion in the world by human wrongdoing or by the diversity of physical natures, just people endure this temporary distortion and will in the end have happiness that is perfectly ordered and everlasting. What is this diversity of physical natures? In the case of slavery, it was quite possible that someone born or sold into slavery was a better physical and mental specimen than their owner. Could this also apply to the domination and servitude of marriage? When Monica first appears in Book One of the Confessions, Augustine says, she worked to ensure that you should be my father, my God, instead of her husband. And in this, you helped her to overcome her husband, whom she, the better, served. Because in this, too, she served you and your orders. And again, in Augustine's account of Monica's marriage, she was handed over to a husband and served him as if a master. Note that, as if, not as. Monica herself told her friends, he says, to think of the marriage contract as the document that made them their husband's slave woman. And mindful of their condition, they should not assert themselves against their masters. It doesn't mean their condition as a woman. This is the word for social condition, condicio. status determined by social or legal contract. Now, Monica may have been right in practice in her advice to the battered wives of her little town, but she was wrong in law. Roman law did not allow wives to be bought. Money and property went with the wife to give her status in the marriage and to be reclaimed if the husband behaved badly. But that depended on having a family who would take her side. The Emperor Constantine, among others, thought that domestic violence and drunkenness and casual unfaithfulness with slave women were no good grounds for divorce. That's what had happened to lordship dominatio in a fallen world. We don't know what Monica said. We know what Augustine wrote, and if what we're interested in is what Augustine thought about women, it doesn't matter, really, whether Monica said it or not. It doesn't matter whether Augustine improved or even invented Monica's role in the three early dialogues he wrote soon after he decided to give up his career as a public speaker. He set these dialogues in a small gathering of family and friends in a little country villa in Italy. And in these dialogues, Monica is not there when Augustine is discussing the poems of Virgil with his students. She's not educated for that. But she is there when they're talking about theology. She has time for prayer, just as they have. And this is the beginning of Augustine's move from philosophy, which he could share only with his educated men friends, to the Christian religion, which he could share with anyone, regardless of their age or their status or their education or their gender. Monica at Cassiciacum raises one more question about Augustine and women. She is of an age where she's free from the ordinary concerns of family life. It is a celibate group, and Augustine thereafter always lived in a celibate community, in his household at Tagaste, in the clergy house at Hippo. Did he think of women as a source of temptation? He knew that he needed to be celibate. At Milan, he and his friends had decided they couldn't manage a philosophical community that included wives. And in those days, he says, he thought of marriage as legitimate sex. But sex is only one aspect of the central problem of human life that concerned Augustine. Once again, he was asking a different question. The last half century of debate has been preoccupied with sex. As James O'Donnell remarks, if you tell somebody you work on Augustine, they're most likely to reply, oh, that's the one who was against sex. But Augustine was preoccupied with domination, with the desire to dominate and possess, to have one's own way, to make other people do what one wants. And sexual desire is just one, though a very powerful variety, of this kind of desire. Domination and possessiveness distort all human relationships, in family and in society. In City of God, Augustine talks about human peace. When the Romans want peace, they mean that people should obey their orders. When a householder wants peace in his home, he means that people should do what he say. Now we need those structures of command and obedience in a fallen world where we can't even understand each other's languages. But in a fallen world, command and obedience is distorted into domination and servitude. Is there any way out of this? Can division be overcome without domination? Perhaps not overcome in a fallen world. But Augustine thought there are ways of reducing division and domination. One is to live in a religious community where people don't have property, households, families of their own. They are brothers or sisters. The rule of St. Augustine applies both to men and to women. You just have to change his to hers or hers to his. We don't know which he wrote first. The other way is to live in faithful marriage, the physical and emotional bond that is Augustine's most powerful image of union, that is the basic social bond that generates all the basic human relationships. Households are built up round husband and wife, parents and children, in Augustine's time, master and slaves. Cities are built up of households. But in all modes of living, we need to remember the unity of human beings. What are women for is not Augustine's question. There are two kinds of human being, because that is how human beings reproduce. They do so with God's blessing. But that does not mean that the two kinds of human being are divided, unless it is by their own wish to have their own way. Augustine's answer is the Bible text that meant so much to him. How good and pleasant it is to dwell together in unity.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Augustinian Institute, entitled Why Are There Women? Augustine Answers. This talk was delivered by Professor Dr. Gillian E. Clark.